A million things to say before I die. Please, man, I just want a phone, the man says between breaths. I glance at the guard standing in the corner with his hands on his belt. The guard shakes his head as I knew he would. He shakes his head every time. I'm sorry, sir, I tell the patient. I'm not allowed to do that. But tell me what else I can do to help you. Just get a phone. I need to call my ma. I'm uncomfortable, forced into this standoff. The chair creaks as I shift my weight. Why do I need to be the liaison between the guard and the man lying in the hospital bed? There wasn't a single lecture on this topic in medical school. In this room, the man is a patient, not a prisoner, and I wish I could treat him as such. I feel as if I'm at a costume party. Me dressed in my yellow isolation gown to minimize spreading germs from one patient to the next. The guard with his weapon on his hip, as if the patient may leap out of bed and rob a gas station, again, at any moment. And the patient slash prisoner in his blue hospital gown. The faded fabric looks exceptionally thin on his muscular frame. I briefly wonder what other bodies that gown has covered. A frail old lady with a GI bleed, perhaps. The blue fabric draped over her bones as she gets infused with IV fluids and protonics. An injection drug user, maybe, here for antibiotics to treat a lump of bacteria growing on his heart valve. I wonder if anyone has ever died wearing the exact gown my patient is wearing. Unfortunately, we can't let you make a call, I say. I'm sure to say we, not I, hoping the guard feels a sliver of guilt. But what else can I do? How can I make you more comfortable? Just the phone, man, the patient insists, his face laced with frustration. He adjusts the nasal cannula on his face with an angry hand. The prongs pop out of his nostrils, and I see his work of breathing increase. This is messed up. My family doesn't even know I'm here. I silently agree with him. If I were hospitalized, I'd want to let my loved ones know, but it's no use. When the patient was first admitted, he'd asked to make a phone call, and I told him it wouldn't be a problem. I'd left the room to fetch a phone, and the guard came jogging after me like I was a runaway, saying it was against the correctional facility's policy to allow inmates to make any calls. Too easy to call their homies. Too easy to get someone to break them out. Much easier to escape a hospital room than a prison cell. A few days later, I'm with the patient again. The cannula has been replaced by a mask, and the monitor on the wall tells me his oxygen saturation is in the mid-80s. Not great. Hi, sir, I say. How are you feeling? He takes a minute to answer. The muscles in his neck are working to help him bring in air. His chest heaves like a boat in the ocean. Phone call, is all he says. I don't bother looking at the guard. There are treatments for this, I tell him. Medicines we can try. A sad smile crawls across his face. Nah, man, I'm old enough. I done my time. Now I gotta pay for things I done. I wonder if he's delirious, or if he really thinks this virus is God's cosmic justice for his crimes. Truth is, he's committed his fair share. DUI, domestic abuse, battery, armed robbery. The list goes on. In Wisconsin, it's all on public record, viewable online. Outside of this building, he's not a very nice guy. I tried not to let that taint my medical decision-making. And at 42 years old, why is he saying he's old enough? Christ, that's me in a decade. I'm familiar with the anxiety of aging, but I still have a lot I want to do with my life, more than can be accomplished in 10 years. I need more time and more energy. It's interesting, isn't it? We spend our youth wishing we were older, and then we waste the rest of our lives wishing we were younger. There's a period of about 2 weeks in our mid-20s when we're totally content, but I think I missed mine. Too busy working. Phone, he pleads again. Call my family. I got a million things to say before I die. Another week goes by, and every day I offer him treatment. Not that any treatment has been shown to be particularly effective for this virus, but there are things we can try. He declines and declines and declines. The oxygen flow is increased. He's placed on BiPAP to force air into his lungs. The numbers on the monitor go down, down, down. He's moved to the intensive care unit for closer monitoring, for possible intubation. We have a talk about his wishes, about what he wants to do if. That if seems less hypothetical every day. "Just let me go," he says, his words muffled through the mask, nearly drowned by the noise of the machines. "Don't want no tube." It's the same answer he gave when he first came in, so I can't chalk it up to hypoxia. "You're so young," I argue. "You have fight in you yet." He shakes his head. "Nah, I just want to call Ma." I look at the guard, a shake of the head. I make a phone call to the prison, explaining what's happening. Explain that the patient, who they know as the prisoner, is probably going to die. Explain that this may be his last chance to say goodbye. The prison supervisor needs to talk to his supervisor. I have no idea how far up the ladder it goes. As the request is passed from rung to rung, the patient continues to deteriorate. But in 2 days' time, I receive permission to let the patient make a phone call to his mother. The guy makes it sound like he's doing me a big favor, like this is technically a breach in protocol. And the call must be made on speakerphone in the presence of the guard, but I don't think the patient will mind. I feel a momentary weightlessness, delighted, excited to bring the patient some good news. But when I arrive, he's asleep. I rub his shoulder. He barely stirs. He's semi-conscious, his brain screaming for more oxygen than his damaged lungs can deliver. In most circumstances, the patient would be intubated. A ventilator would do the breathing for him for a few days, give his body time. His lungs would gradually recover. He would then be extubated. He would survive. But this man does not want that, so I do nothing but watch the weight of his chest rise and tremble and fall. He is lying on a hospital bed that is going to be his deathbed. I wonder how many of us are sleeping on a bed that in a day or a year or a decade will be our deathbed. All he wanted was a phone call. Well, he can make it now, but now is too late. I pass the patient's room the next morning. The bed is empty, the sheets replaced by crisp, clean ones, neatly tucked beneath the mattress like at a hotel. I wonder how many people have died in that bed before. I wonder who will sleep there next. I carry on, round on my other patients, drink some coffee, work on documentation. The day passes, business as usual. On the drive home, I call my mom.